You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Laser.
And this is Aubrey.
We are the Double Clicks, and you are listening to the Flopcast. Good job!
Woo!
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 510.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Here we are, Kevin. Hello.
We are here. Just a quick, silly show today on, two or three quick, silly subjects. Just some random nonsense. Then we'll get out of here.
That's a plan I can get behind.
We can all agree on that. Random nonsense is good. Item number one, of course, Cornflake, what's going on for National Whatever Day?
Oh boy, you best get ready for some random nonsense, Kevin, because I picked a celebrity birthday on February 14th. Drew Bledsoe is turning 50 years old.
Yeah, okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
I didn't realize we were going to have a little sports talk today. It's Super Bowl week, I believe.
So we're talking Drew Bledsoe. I, of course, remember him for his years with the New England Patriots. That's where he was for most of his professional football career.
Do you actually remember Bledsoe from the Patriots?
Well, I remember him because of all of the promotional stuff that he did. I wasn't watching football back then, but I knew Drew Bledsoe as a name.
Yeah, in the 90s.
He was a big deal.
And early 2000s. He was very good. He brought us to a Super Bowl in the 90s, like 97, I want to say, somewhere around there.
But I'm sure you're curious as to why I would pick Drew Bledsoe.
It does seem like an odd pick for you for whatever day. Yeah, why are we talking about Drew Bledsoe?
Well, get ready for things to get weird. I discovered that I guess he grew up in Walla Walla, Washington, and he moved back there and he opened a winery. Did you know this?
This is the first I'm hearing this. So he has wine. Have you tried it? Do you have it? Are you sipping a glass of Drew Bledsoe wine right now?
Well, Kevin, you know I couldn't do that without you. So I checked it out. And what I decided, Kevin, is that the Flopcast needs some Bledsoe booze. So watch your mail, Kevin. I bought you some Bledsoe booze and it's coming your way.
You're mailing Drew Bledsoe wine to Chickentown Studios.
Yes. Well, you know, I used to bring wine there in person.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I just find you like slumped over outside the doorway to the studio with a paper bag. And yeah, there'd be a bottle of wine in it. Yeah, I remember that.
And I got a couple of bottles. So hopefully there will be one for me someday when I come back.
Oh, so you've got one coming to you, one coming here to the studio.
Oh, no, they're all coming to Chicken Town.
Oh, they're all coming to me. But you're hoping that I'll hold back some of the wine until the day that you can arrive here again.
I mean, Bledsoe booze may be so good that you might not be able to, in which case I wouldn't blame you. But basically, I picked Drew Bledsoe's birthday as an opportunity for the Flopcast to get some hooch. So, happy birthday, Drew Bledsoe. We're going to have some wine. Cheers.
Wow, it sounds like happy birthday to me. Even though it's not my birthday, but yes, you're sending me Bledsoe wine. Drew Bledsoe even people that aren't football people, like you and me are football super fans. You know, we go to all the games, we're wearing our big football jerseys and full shoulder pads and whatnot and helmets right now. We do that every week to record the show. But for people who are not as into football as you and me, Bledsoe was the Patriots quarterback right before Tom Brady.
Right.
And Bledsoe was injured. Middle of the game, Bledsoe goes down. Brady was just the backup quarterback.
Isn't that something?
Just riding the bench, you know? And just out of nowhere, suddenly he comes in because Bledsoe's down and suddenly Tom Brady's great. And Bledsoe never got his job back. And here we are. So it's like, what about the alternate timeline? What if Bledsoe did not get injured in that game? Would anybody know the name Tom Brady today, 20 plus years later?
See, that I don't know.
Would Brady be the one making wine?
I hope not.
In Washington State.
I'm happy with the fact that our wine is coming from True Blood. So,
well, me too. I'm very excited about this. And in the unlikely event that I don't just chug it all down immediately, the mailman and I will crack open the wine together as soon as it arrives and just pass the bottle back and forth right on the front steps of the studio. It'll all be gone. But thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
For that, I look forward to that. And happy birthday, former football guy, current wine guy, Drew Bledsoe. What a weird whatever day.
That's the way I make them.
What a whatever day that involves me getting free wine. So what am I complaining about? Right. Hopefully the mayor of Chickentown won't listen to this episode, and then I won't have to share, you know? Everybody be quiet about my Bledsoe wine.
Don't tell the mayor.
Don't tell the mayor.
I think that's very unlikely, Kevin, but hey, you can always dream.
That's the plan. I had a couple of just silly things I came across recently that I thought I'd share with you, and then we'll just get out of here. I have a TV thing. I have a bird thing. You pick. What are we doing first?
Bird.
Bird first.
Bird.
I like the way you think. Have you heard the story of the Stellar's Sea Eagle? Are you aware of this?
I feel like the Stellar Sea Eagle is very big, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. That's about all I know of the Stellar Sea Eagle.
That's fine. See, I wasn't even aware of this thing. It's a bird. It's a giant bird.
It's massive.
Like, it weighs 20 pounds. It has an 8-foot wingspan. It's one of the largest types of eagles. It's one of the largest raptors in the world. Stellar's Sea Eagle. They live in Asia. Mm-hmm. They hang out around Japan, Korea, and Russia. And that's about it, except for one of them.
What?
One brave sea eagle, Cornflake, packed its bags and moved to where we are right now, North America.
Whoa.
It was spotted around Alaska a few months ago. And okay, that's not crazy far for the bird to get, you know, from Russia to Alaska.
Right.
But it kept going, heading east across North America. This is one particular, they've confirmed, they can recognize it's one particular Stellar Sea Eagle.
It just says wanderlust.
Made its way all the way across North America, and in December was spotted in Massachusetts.
That's insane.
Right here in Massachusetts, there had never been a confirmed sighting of a Stellar Sea Eagle in the lower 48 United States before. And all the bird watchers were freaking out.
Wow.
People were coming from far and wide because they wanted to see the Stellar Sea Eagle, you know, check it off their life list. You know, the bird people?
They have a list.
You keep a life list. All the birds that you see, check them off the list. This is our big chance. We never thought we'd see a Stellar Sea Eagle. It came to us. How convenient. And yeah, it was hanging around Massachusetts for a while. And now, for several weeks or so, it's been up in Maine. It's been on the coast of central Maine.
Whoa.
And again, people are watching it. People come from miles around to check it out. And it's just been hanging out. Seems to be doing well.
That's amazing.
The climate it's comfortable with, and it has plenty of food available to it that it seems to enjoy. So theoretically, it can live here now. They're not sure. Is it going to try to fly home? Does it know how to fly home? You know, birds are crazy with, like, how they can, you know, travel long distances and know where they're going and figure out how to get around.
Yeah, it's like innate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But this thing's not supposed to be here. So it's not like there was a plan for this bird to be in Maine. So I think people were hypothesizing that maybe it might have been some kind of climate thing. A massive storm swept it off course. They're not sure. Is it trying to get home? Does it just like it in Maine? Hanging on the beach, eating lobster rolls.
Well, if I were a Stellar Sea Eagle and I found myself in Maine, I would stay.
You like Maine?
You know I do.
Do you think it was perched on top of the trap tree for Christmas time?
Now that is a picture I would have loved to have seen. Yes.
I've seen video of the Stellar Sea Eagle. Somebody shot some video of it. It was perched way up on top of a tree and it was eating a duck.
Whoa.
I think it was Peking duck. Like, it had to order it way in advance from a local Chinese restaurant. So we are massive fans of birds around here, of course. And I mean, it seems to be doing okay. It's hard to get inside the brain of a bird and figure out what, you know. I hope it's cool. Is it having a lovely visit? We hope it's not sad and lonely.
Oh, people in Maine are so nice. I'm sure that that bird is getting first-class five-star treatment and all the lobster it can eat when it's not munching on ducks.
Yeah, let's hope so. I'm hoping it might stop by Chickentown Studios. You know, I did not see it when it was down here in Massachusetts. We have a lot of birds that hang out around the studio. There's chickens, obviously. We're in Chickentown. But we see many types of birds in these parts.
Well, I hope the Stellar Sea Eagle can make its way back to you, then.
Yeah, I feel like this would be a logical destination for a weird giant bird, because that's kind of what we're into around here. We'll put it right on the show. We'll make it a star.
We definitely could.
Let's make this an official public invitation to the Stellar Sea Eagle to stop on by the studio. I have some eagle-size headphones it can wear, and it can step right up to the mic and tell its story. So this concludes our new segment, Stellar Sea Eagles in the News.
Perfect.
Which I'm guessing will be a very infrequent segment.
Yeah, probably.
But that's okay, because we have another thing I wanted to bring up today.
Oh, do you?
That was the TV thing. I don't even know if it's a TV thing. It's TV adjacent.
What? Okay, that requires some explanation.
Well, I'm not sure if what we're about to discuss ever actually appeared on TV anywhere, although it looks like a TV show. And it hits a lot of things that are very much of interest to us, starting with the fact that it's a PSA.
Oh, we're doing some more PSA talk. I like it.
We just did a whole show about PSAs 2-3 weeks ago. Canadian PSAs.
Yeah. I've been singing some of the songs from those PSAs ever since. I'm like, don't you put it in your mouth.
Yeah. You're like, you're just wandering around singing, don't you put it in your mouth. And drugs, drugs, drugs.
Drugs, drugs, drugs.
Your two new favorite hit songs. And whatever it was that giant bear was singing, telling the kids to stop smoking.
Oh, I don't know. That was word salad. I couldn't make sense of what he was getting at.
Well, this one, it's a PSA about smoking. It's called Let's Call It Quits. It's from 1974. It was just brought to my attention yesterday. So this is all new to me. It was brought to my attention by our friends at Rubber Chicken Comics. You know, our favorite local comic book shop.
Yeah. They just tell you about PSAs? That's really cool.
Yeah, they're a full-service comic book shop. They sell comics, and they notify me about PSAs.
There is a level of awesomeness about them that I just didn't even realize they had.
The Stellar Sea Eagle should stop by Rubber Chicken Comics. They like giant weird birds down there also.
That they do. Could
perch right on the roof. Well, Let's Call It Quits is the PSA. And many weird, interesting things about this anti-smoking PSA. First of all, the PSAs, the Canadian PSAs that we were talking about recently, and most PSAs that you see, they can be 30 seconds long or a minute long, maybe a couple of minutes. That could be the length of a song, you know, like the Schoolhouse Rock PSAs, of course. This one clocks in at 28 minutes.
What? And it's a PSA.
It's a full-length program-length anti-smoking PSA. Yes.
Wow.
It's like a sitcom. The whole thing is filmed like a sitcom. There's a laugh track. It's a very simple story. It's a couple, husband and wife. They have kids, and they're both smokers. They decide to attempt to quit smoking, and then that's the whole rest of the show is they're trying to quit smoking.
And then comedy ensues?
It's hilarious. The wife does a slightly better job with her attempts to quit smoking. Meanwhile, the guy keeps failing and sneaking cigarettes. Their friends are also smokers. All his co-workers are all smoking. Everybody's smoking everywhere. They get together at their house, at the house of this couple. They have all their friends over to discuss how they should really all quit smoking. The kids are running around. Everybody's smoking for 28 minutes.
Yeah. Are the kids running around or are the kids absolutely asthmatic?
Yeah. Yeah, the kids run a little bit, then just collapse in a coughing fit.
Gasping.
Yeah.
And then the laugh track plays. Man, yeah. I can't.
So simple enough, you know, sitcom style, half hour long, anti-smoking PSA.
Now, was it a bunch of people in it that never became famous or?
Yeah, that's where this gets interesting. Couple of very interesting things about this. These are like veteran TV actors. Everybody in the cast had long, extensive credits when I looked them up, although it's mostly people that you never heard of. But the stars of the show, Cornflake, the husband and wife, the character names are George and Maggie Harvey. They're played by Tom Bosley and Marion Ross.
What?
As in Mr. and Mrs. Cunningham.
Happy days.
This is the Happy Days couple together as husband and wife, but playing different characters in 1974, which is the year that Happy Days started.
That is so weird.
It's so weird, especially that you're watching the two of them just puffing away on cigarettes for a half hour, which, as I recall, you did not see a lot of on Happy Days.
Yeah, they're not playing their characters in this PSA.
No, they're not. But it's so weird because it's them together as a married couple, and it's in the Happy Days era. Very strange. Some of the other characters are vaguely recognizable. One of the other guys from Tom Bosley's office, he was actually a recurring character on Wonder Woman. He was Wonder Woman's boss when she worked for the government, the Linda Carter series, for a few episodes. Another guy from the office, when they all get together for their big cigarette party, his wife, played by Tracy Reed, who again has a million TV credits, but I like that she did an episode. She did a couple of episodes of Benson, and on Benson with Robert Guillaume, her character was called Benson's Dream Girl. So I like that.
Wow.
Hopefully she was off the cigarettes by then. This would have been, you know, 10 years later. And I can't imagine Benson's Dream Girl
puffing away on a cigarette.
Yeah. So she probably cleaned up her act. Now, Tom Bosley has a secretary in this thing. There's scenes at the office, and it's creepy. There's a scene where he's just leering at his secretary as he lights up a cigarette. So yeah, it's like, hey, this is Howard Cunningham. This is Father Dowling. What am I looking at?
I don't want to picture Father Dowling leering at his secretary.
This is glad trash bag spokesperson Tom Bosley from my childhood, you know? Now he's checking out the pretty blonde secretary as she bends over at the filing cabinet. There's literally a scene like this, Corn Flick.
No. So is this like also a PSA for office behavior and what is appropriate?
It should have been, but there doesn't seem to be any judgment over Tom leering at the secretary. It's presented as, this is fine. You can check out your secretary. Just don't light up a cigarette as you're doing it, seemed to be the lesson. So a pretty blonde secretary whose character name on IMDb is Secretary.
That's so perfect.
Played by Candace Rialson, who did a bunch of acting back then, including, this amused me, her other credits from 1974. She did a lot of like trashy exploitation kind of movies in the 70s. Her other credits from 1974 include the cinematic classics Candy Stripe Nurses and Mama's Dirty Girls.
Oh, no.
I would watch both of those movies right now. Forget Six Pack, Cornflake. When we get together next, we're going to watch Mama's Dirty Girls. Wait, I looked up Mama's Dirty Girls. It's just now. It says, Mama loves men, but she loves money even more. She's trained her three teenage daughters to meet, marry, and murder men for their money.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not what I was expecting.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. We approve. Anyway, that's the secretary.
Good times.
She's also one of Mama's Dirty Girls.
Aren't we all, Kevin?
And she's a candy stripe nurse. Yes, aren't we all? All right, so that's there's the adult cast. I'm not done with how crazy this is, Cornflake.
I was going to say, there's the kids.
Yeah, there's the kids. The Cunninghams, or I'm sorry, the Harvey family, they have three kids, two boys and a girl. The characters' names on IMDb are son, and daughter.
Oh, nice.
The daughter, played by Kim Durso, who did a few little things here and there. She had a recurring role on Days of Our Lives, the soap opera, at one point. One of the sons was a kid named Brad Savage, who did a ton of stuff. Very busy kid actor back then. His biggest recurring role was on The Tony Randall Show. That was post-Odd Couple. Tony Randall had a show where he was a judge called The Tony Randall Show, and Brad Savage played his son. But he also, he did a Whiz Kids episode. He was in Red Dawn. So this kid worked quite a bit. Now, the other son, hang on, Cornflake.
The other son is?
You might need a sip of Drew Bledsoe wine to get through this. The other son was Robbie Rist.
No, that's amazing.
This is 1974. This is Cousin Oliver era Robbie Rist.
Wow.
Watching Tom Bosley smoke a cigarette for a half hour.
with a look that I'm sure only Cousin Oliver could give him.
I'm not done with how crazy this thing is.
No?
There's one more key bit of shocking information about the PSA. Let's call it quits.
I can't begin to imagine.
No, you can't. This is so weird. The whole thing is set, exterior and interior, the setting for the home of the Harvey family. It's the Brady Bunch house.
No!
They shot the whole thing on the set of the Brady Bunch.
No! No, that's just wrong.
And I mean, even the exterior of the house, which is not connected to the interiors, the outside of the Brady house is not where they shot the show. But they used that same shot. They show the outside of the Brady Bunch house, and then they go inside, and it's the Brady Bunch house.
That's, well, I'm sure it's not incorrect, but it's just wrong. That's so disorienting.
It's so weird. And I mean the whole house. There's scenes in the living room with the giant crazy stairs going upstairs. The kitchen, they're all in the kitchen, the whole family. And, you know, that's Alice's kitchen. They're all sitting in together, smoking cigarettes.
Alice would not approve.
The bedroom. You get Howard and Marion Cunningham in Carol and Mike Brady's bed. They use the Brady's bedroom.
It's nothing sacred.
Nothing.
And apparently the house comes with one Cousin Oliver.
Cousin Oliver, yes. This is So here's where it really gets crazy is I was trying to figure out the timeline of this. This PSA is dated 1974. I read at the beginning it says like copyright 1974, American Cancer Society or whatever. So dated 1974, the Brady Bunch ended in 1974. The final season, season 5, was 73-74.
So did everyone else just clear out and Cousin Oliver just stayed and they filled the PSA around him?
That's one possibility is yes. The Brady Bunch wrapped production.
Cousin Oliver had no other place to go.
They forgot to tell Robbie Rist. They bring the cast of Happy Days in to shoot a PSA, and there's Cousin Oliver still hanging around, so they throw him in the show. I don't know. Happy Days started just as the Brady Bunch was ending. First episode of Happy Days aired in January 1974. The first Cousin Oliver episode of the Brady Bunch, also January 1974.
Bizarre.
Final episode of the Brady Bunch, which also was a Cousin Oliver episode. Cousin Oliver was only in 6 episodes of the Brady Bunch. He was there at the very end of the run of the Brady's for just a half a dozen shows. But the final episode aired in March 1974. So this thing was somehow shot right in this time frame, I'm assuming. So maybe it was shot in late 73 or early 74. And as far as the exact timeline with the Brady Bunch and Happy Days, it all was kind of jumbled in.
It's like cosmic alignment.
It's somehow all lined up. And I mean, they were shooting at the same studio. Happy Days and Brady Bunch were both shot, I think, at Paramount. So theoretically, Tom and Marion had already been paired up for Happy Days at this time. But so bizarre that this all came together.
It's a perfect 70s storm, I would say.
It's also so bizarre that it's happening in the Brady Bunch house because, like, there's a big party happening in the Brady Bunch living room with all these people from Tom Bosley's office smoking cigarettes. And they've got one of those bars. Remember, like, every TV show in the 70s, they had that little rolling kind of bar? They're pouring out glasses of scotch for everybody. So it's just all these people with cigarettes and scotch. And they're in the Brady Bunch living room.
That is warped. That is all kinds of wrong.
It's astonishing. I also can't figure out, what did they do with this? Was this intended to be shown to school children? But then, what about the leering at Mama's Dirty Girl scene? You know, like, what? If this was intended to show to 10-year-old kids, why have Howard Cunningham checking out the hot girl at the office?
Yeah.
You know, that seems a little out of place. Plus everybody knocking back whiskey in the Brady Bunch house.
Yeah.
There's very little information about this show online. I searched around for as much as I could scrape up today. And I found like a message board or something where somebody said they remember seeing this in a high school health class.
Okay.
So they were showing it in school, at least to high school students.
Who obviously don't need any messaging around drinking or sexual harassment or anything like that. They just need to be told not to smoke.
I think high school kids of the 70s may have been doing a little bit of drinking and smoking and leering at candy stripe nurses already, with or without this PSA.
Very true.
I've seen Dazed and Confused. I know what it was like back then.
Just don't smoke, kids. But here's a whole scene of everybody drinking.
They do acknowledge, though, in the course of the show that their drinking is also a problem.
Oh, awesome.
They don't dwell on it. But at one point, they worry that if they quit smoking, then they'll start drinking more.
Oh, the wisdom of the 70s.
Anyway, this is fantastic. It's on YouTube. We will absolutely post the link so everybody can enjoy Let's Call It Quits with Howard and Marion Cunningham and Cousin Oliver in the Brady House. It's remarkable.
That is simply marvelous.
Hits a lot of favorites for us. And so wanted to make sure you were aware of it. Cornflake, before we wrap up, you had one quick thing for me. What do you have?
I realize I've been enjoying this now for months, Kevin, and I should have let you in on it. You know our friend John Sloan out in Minnesota, artist John Sloan?
Artist John Sloan. Yes, I know that guy.
You might most recently remember him because he designed the cover for my album.
Yes, I have a copy of your album. And yes, the cartoon on the cover of the album, that's John Sloan.
And it's really cool looking.
Yeah.
So he has a couple of comics he runs online. He's best known probably for the Dojang, but starting back in the summer, a comic strip updates every day called Jim and Celeste. It starts in August of 1985 with some kids in an arcade, and it tells the story of Jim and Celeste, a couple of high school students. He's making something amazing and fun to read, all set in the 80s with these really cool characters, Jim and Celeste, and all their buddies in school. And I would recommend that you check it out because we love the 80s around here.
All right. Yeah, we like comics. We like 80s stuff. And we like John Sloan, friend of the show, John Sloan. And I believe John is the artist guest of honor at MarsCon this year.
You heard correctly. He is.
MarsCon happening in Minnesota in March. Yeah. So, all right. Cool. I will look into this and we recommend everybody check it out. Well, that was a just goofy, random, quick episode as promised. So I think we did it. My wine has not arrived yet. I've been listening for the doorbell all this time.
Hopefully the chickens haven't signed for it, Kevin, because you'll never get it back from them.
That's a good point.
Better check on those chickens.
But meanwhile, Cornflake, let's get out of here.
Okay. We'll do that by letting you know where you can find us between shows and cool links to all the things we've been talking about. Flopcast.net is our website. We're on facebook.com/flopcast. On Twitter, our handle is @flopcast. And on Instagram, the_flopcast. Over at Apple Podcasts, you could leave us a rating and or a review. It'll help other people who need to know about smoking PSAs that run for 28 minutes about the show. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Sponge Awareness Foundation, we only have one fan, but that fan is a Stellar's Sea Eagle. Cornflake, thanks for a quick, silly Flopcast. Everybody, remember, be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
It was the dawn of another podcast. The Epsilon 3 is a dream given form. It's a home away from home for three guys to watch a 90s sci-fi classic TV show. Three guys with microphones over 3,249 miles apart, all alone in the night. The year is 2021. The name of the station is Babylon 5. The name of the podcast is the Epsilon 3. Veer, bring me a drink.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we're the hosts of the Watchathon of Rassilon,
a podcast where we're watching through all of Doctor Who.
And we're just about finished with the classic series.
Depending on when you hear this, we may already be done.
So why not go check for yourself?
And while you're there, why not go ahead and listen to every single episode of the Watchathon of Rassilon?
And watch as Joe loses his last little tenuous grip on sanity.
The Watchathon of Rassilon, a proud member of the ESO Network.
Okay, it's the secret after show. Cornflake, what's going on?
I sent you something silly.
Yes, I have an email from you. What do we have here? Should I look at this?
Yeah, check it out.
I've opened the email. I'm looking at, these are candy hearts. 'Tis the season. This is Valentine week.
But not just any hearts. Not just any candy hearts.
These are like an image of those candy hearts, those little chalky, disgusting hearts with the different messages printed on them.
Which usually say things like, be mine and too cute, but not these ones.
I'm reading the thing now. These are candy hearts as written by one of those neural net artificial computer robots that they program to make stuff up.
Yes, GPT-2.
They put a computer robot in charge of writing candy heart messages, and that's what we have examples of here. So they just say weird things, like it says...
No blinking?
No blinking, yep.
Yes, 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 yes.
One of them says bath towels.
One of them says beans.
Yep. One just says fluff, super bear. All right, so these are weird. They're weird candy hearts, which apparently were written by a robot.
And I saw one that said, all hail the chicken.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, there is one. All right, now I understand why you sent this to me. One of these does indeed say, all hail the chicken.
Yes.
Supposedly written by a robot, by a computer. It might have been just a giant, confused Asian sea eagle.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.